You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. No, he's not Miguel Jordan. That's not it. It's Jordan, okay? Alvarez. Jordan Alvarez.
Well, how would Michael Jordan's name be translated in Spanish?
Michael Jordan.
It wouldn't be Miguel Jordan?
No, it's Michael Jordan.
And once I saw
in every language
that there was a baseball player using my name and likeness, I knew I had to get in his ass. Salty Jordan. No. Michael, it's spelled actually Jordan. I know some people said Jordan at the first. You don't have to be mad at this guy. He's just a baseball player from another country. Please don't put him on your
shirt,
list, Mike.
Don't you have a shirt that says Air Jordan?
Yeah.
Did you tell Mike about that? All right, then.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. That's what I thought.
What if Mike saw that shirt? Oh, really?
Mike would be in your ass like those protesters in Minneapolis.
Yeah. Mike probably turned him in for the trash can stuff because of it.
Yeah. See. Yeah.
You see?
See what you call
Mike is. Mike sometimes will go into snitch mode now.
Oh, cocaine and hookers?
Tattletale mode. Episode one. Hey. Those guys from the early 80s Bulls are like, hey. What the hell, Mike? Got this supposed to say every year the goat.
Why are you throwing us in a bunch of grease? My kids.
The first episode, they're like, hey, this will be fun. I remember Mike.
Craig Hodges is like, come on, kids, gather around. I played with this guy. Watch this. And then the cocaine and hookers were in there. There were people doing things. There was people in Minneapolis with the pants and the thing. And then the this. And then I just had Sprite. And I just had orange juice. So that's what I was doing. I wanted to win. But they wanted to win cocaine and hookers. Craig, Daddy? No. Cut it off. I don't know, Mike.
I wasn't in that room.
Craig Hodges' wife said, excuse me? Mike, you know Mike.
Mike's snitching.
Mike's a jokester. You know, he's just telling stories.
How old is Craig Hodges by now?
It's got to be, what, 50
That was like
plus
37
years
ago. He was 20-something. Yeah, I guess that 60. Makes sense, yeah.
Mike's 58.
57.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Craig Hodges is 59.
Yeah.
Craig Hodges is like, what?
What the bleep?
Craig probably wasn't married back then.
What the bleep, Mike? Thanks, Mike.
Isn't Craig the one that said his kids, he had to explain to his kids or his wife?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Daddy. Did you hear Mike say, I was doing cocaine? I was there with Mike drinking Sprites and orange juice.
Me and Mike.
Getting some extra shots in.
Oh, and no. Well, Craig wasn't all that happy. He wasn't interviewed at all. He got none.
Was Scott Burrell, is he married and have kids? I feel so bad for Scott Burrell if he does.
Well, I hope it's not I hope that he wasn't with her at that time. It's his high school sweetheart because Mike was putting all these women on him, right?
Yeah, he's married to, they had a Scott Burrell day in Hamden. He's married to Sportsnet New York reporter Jeanne Copley.
That wasn't his high school sweetheart.
Though. With whom he has two kids.
Okay.
But, that's right, yeah, because Jordan snitched on him there, too.
Yeah, on the plane.
Come on, Mike.
When he was a rook.
Come on, Mike. This is going to be on TV. Why are you doing this?
Yeah, Jeanne Copley says, I was in high school when Baby Robin was at his peak, so she didn't know Scott Burrell. She was only in high school at the time.
No.
Dang.
She don't know nothing about that.
Dang, Scott did okay.
Yeah? Well, she was a reporter for who? Of New York?
I mean.
SNY reporter, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's doing good.
Oh, you better
do good.
You mean a professional athlete?
Yeah.
Got
the
job done?
Professional athlete, got a hot girl. Wow. Didn't see that coming.
It's unique for Scott Burrell to do that.
All right. We're going to have Al Rosen, by the way, joining us at the bottom of the hour. He's our constable, Precinct 1. And we'll talk about the training and all that stuff, Dell, that you were asking a little bit earlier. So we're going to have Al Rosen on. See, you know, how cops go about this now. What is their training as they're getting ready to join the police force for stuff like this? What is their training for arrests? Is it putting your knee on someone's throat for eight minutes and 46 seconds?
I imagine he's going to tell us that's not the case.
That's probably not a protocol. That's not in the handbook. I'm pretty sure. Not in the handbook. So we'll have Al Rosen on in a little bit. He's recovering from the coronavirus, actually.
No offense to Al Rosen, but I get this strange feeling that it's an Al Golden, Josh Rosen type combination, and I don't feel good.
It's different.
I know it's different, but I don't feel good about it.
Anytime you got Al and Rosen.
Yeah, but subconsciously.
I hear it, though, and I'm like, ugh. Because Rosen can sound like Golden, and you got to, oof. It's like, oof. Knock it off.
Yeah. Everybody send Del, tweet Del pictures of Al
Golden. That doesn't bother me anymore. He's like the tight end coach for the Lions or something, whatever.
I know, but he still bothers you from his time. Is that your least favorite coach ever?
Yeah, because he did everything.
In any sport ever.
Trying to think. Cam Cameron, it was only a pain in my ass for a year when they went 1-15, the Dolphins did. Yes, because he did everything he could to make Miami football unrecognizable. From the that 3-4 read and react defense bullcrap. I was like, ugh. As bad as Manny Diaz got it here in Texas, he was a breath of fresh air. What, we can get in the backfield and attack people? Thanks, you man. Thank you, Manny. We appreciate it. The defense at least looks like a Miami defense. Freaking Al Golden.
Al Golden, that's all I got to do. And he triggered.
It was 5 years
ago.
Who's
your least favorite coach ever, Lance?
Ever for my own personal team?
Yeah.
We may be living it.
That's all I'm living. I'm living it right now.
I mean, honestly, Jimmy Williams is probably up there.
Oh, Jimmy Williams.
It's probably Jimmy Williams.
No.
I didn't think there was nobody who could end up being a...
I was in that locker room, too.
Yeah,
Jimmy Williams was the biggest a-hole ever.
Total creep.
Of any coach I've ever covered. He was the biggest a-hole ever. But I almost dislike when Bill O'Brien wins.
Ooh, that's a bad feeling.
It's a bad feeling because you want your team to win, and yet you're like, oh, but Bill won. I know a lot of people that think that, too.
I think we may be living it. And for me, it's only strictly because of how he treats people.
Yeah.
I'm okay with Bill O'Brien, the football coach. I don't love it, but I'm okay with it.
He's not a bad coach. He's actually a good coach.
Yeah, it's the 84-degree day in Houston for me as opposed to the 40-degree day on the wire. It's the 84-degree day. It's not beautiful. It's not super comfortable. It's humid, but it's not outlandish. It's okay. He's okay as a coach.
84-degree day is pretty good.
84-degree day with humidity is not good. We already know you have a warped sense of what's good.
An excellent day.
I would take 76 with no. I would take 72 with no humidity. That's why why do they put Minute Maid at? Why don't they just do 84 degrees with a little humidity? It'd be a beautiful day for you.
Yeah.
You know what you'd say?
I'd be fine.
This feels stuffy in here.
No, it doesn't. No.
Set your house on 84.
Fine. I'd be fine with it.
Does Wendy set her at the house on 84?
Nope.
Why not?
Because we like to sleep in a lot of blankets, really cold.
Yeah. See? Yeah. See?
Yeah. And then get up and, ooh, it's hot outside. So awesome. Play golf.
That's what Bill O'Brien is. He's, for me, the humid 84-degree day. Like, it's not going to – I can spend my time outside, but I don't love it. I'm not comfortable. It's not something I aspire to. And but the personality – I've heard enough stories from national people, some people over at the network who have had to – it's just not great. It's just not great. And I just believe you have to fundamentally treat people a certain kind of way. You should treat, it's not different. We talk about all the issues that we've talked about. Fundamentally, you need to treat people a decent way. I don't think Jordan treated people bad. That's a flaw to me. It's a flaw, but I understand it's part of who he was in the bigger picture, but I don't think it's great.
But the difference the difference is with Mike was that he didn't do anything. He didn't ask you to do anything he wouldn't do.
I understand, but he was just an a-hole to Scott.
He was an a-hole. Well. Yeah.
There's no other way around it. Was preparing Scott mentally for when the time
and you know
came.
Who wasn't
That's
even,
kind of an excuse.
You know who wasn't even in this is Dennis Hobson, who he treated even worse.
Why would he want Hobson in it?
If you're going to show what an a-hole Mike was, you got to show some Dennis Hobson.
Because he probably thought Hobson wasn't in it to win.
That's right.
And
Dennis Hobson wasn't in it.
He probably wasn't.
But I think he had a lot of hope for Burrell and pushed him to the limit.
You don't yell at your fans who are mad at halftime. You know what? At some point, you've got to get a little thicker skin. At some point. And it's not going to happen.
Well, no, it's even more than that. You're such a bully. You know,
it is
when somebody questions you about a trade and you got to get them fired.
People getting whacked. People getting whacked in the building. It's just a lot of stuff I'm just not good with.
Nope. And it's hard to root for him for me. Jimmy Williams, though, was the biggest a-hole.
I think Jimmy was the worst.
I like to call him Jimmy.
And he was 1 year, too, right?
I think he was a little two? More, a year and a half or so. But when he was booed at the All-Star game, when the Astros hosted the All-Star game and Jimmy Williams comes out and is booed by the crowd, you know Drayton was like, I can't have the manager... my manager, who's on the All-Star staff, being booed by the home crowd. That's horrible. You're fired. He was fired not long after that, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, he was. Yeah. It was very soon after that. Drake's like,
well, this doesn't seem like they like this feller too much.
Got to get rid of him. 9:15 ESPN 97.5, Al Rosen joins us, bottom of the hour.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Yes.
919 ESPN 97.5. Al Rosen, the constable, Precinct 1, is going to join us here and at the bottom of the hour. It's about 10 minutes. So some questions that you might have for a cop. If you got any questions for a cop.
Del's going to interview.
And, you know, I want Del to ask the questions because there is some disturbing footage of some stuff the cops are doing right now with rioters. It's an interesting question. What do you do in these circumstances? And he is the constable. So he's fighting the coronavirus, though, right now. So he's been at home. We'll ask him how he's doing. I texted him last week. He said he's feeling fine. He's been fever free for a while, so it's good.
How do you say it's going?
He'll let us know.
Okay,
he'll let us know in just a little bit here on ESPN 97.5. This was an interesting. Here's an interesting thing that they did. From each conference, the best NFL players at each position. So from the Big 12, Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback. Okay. They've got Joe Mixon as their running back, Tyler Lockett, Marquise Brown, Mark Andrews, and CeeDee Lamb is their flex. So that's the best. CeeDee Lamb hasn't played a down in the NFL, and that's the Big 12's best flex receiver.
Well, not going to be DeeDee Westbrook, I guess.
No. I would take CeeDee Lamb right now, right?
Yeah.
I guess. From the ACC, Lamar Jackson, Dalvin Cook, DeAndre Hopkins, Larry Fitzgerald, Kyle Rudolph, some guys.
Who were the wide receivers again? DeAndre?
DeAndre Hopkins and Larry Fitzgerald.
And Larry Fitzgerald didn't play it down in the ACC.
No.
I know Pittsburgh's Pitt
was
now.
In the Big East. East
I know, but he...
But Pitt's in the Big East and the ACC now, so I guess that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it's like Earl
Guess
Campbell,
who the quarterback is from the SEC? What quarterback would you take from the SEC?
In the NFL right now?
In the NFL right now.
We got Matt Stafford, nobody from Alabama.
Auburn, Cam Newton.
LSU, Auburn, yeah, you got Cam Newton.
Mississippi
Georgia,
State.
Georgia State, Ole Miss, Eli's gone. Florida, obviously nobody. Not Kentucky. Not Vanderbilt.
Who does LSU have besides Joe Burrow?
It's got to be Matt Stafford.
Dak.
Oh, yeah, Mississippi State.
I guess you'd take Dak over Matt Stafford?
Yeah, right now. I mean, Matt Stafford's just a lot of stats.
Yeah.
He hasn't impacted anything.
Yeah. But
he's impacted a guy who's gotten paid a bazillion dollars, and that's it. I have not seen him make any difference in winning at all.
Yeah.
None. Not all on him, but some of it is.
Derrick Henry would be the running back. Julio Jones and Mike Evans. Jared Cook and Odell Beckham. Here's where
Jared Cook
at tight end.
Is that how the SEC is cranked out? Yeah, Jordan Reed is not playing anymore. I mean, he's always hurt.
He's old, but Jason Witten from Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yeah, Witten would get it. And Witten still plays. Witten should be it, not Jared Cook.
Well, but when you want Jared Cook right now over Jason Witten, yes.
Jared Cook is... You know, Jared Cook's a weird player because nobody ever wants him.
No, like, but he actually he has puts dangerous up stats games. Every year.
I know, and then no one, everyone's like, you take him.
Yeah. No, he actually puts up stats.
Is there... There's nobody
but
else?
But look at these DBs from the from the SEC.
This is going to be a ton of them.
Stephon Gilmore, Tre'Davious White, Tyrann Mathieu, and Jamal Adams. This doesn't even include Minka, Eddie Jackson, Marlon Humphrey, and Patrick Peterson.
First of all, Minka, who do you have in there ahead of Minka?
Tre'Davious and Stephon Gilmore.
Frankly, you said Tyrann Mathieu?
Tyrann Mathieu.
Frankly, Minka should be ahead of Mathieu. Mathieu's got the name that carries him. Minka right now probably plays better football.
Minka's a little B.A.
I'm so upset about me.
You're still butt hurt. Maybe you need to find an LSU fan.
I don't want that guy at my butt. I'm looking at LSU fans. They don't look all that clean, to be honest with you. Minka all of a sudden comes out and goes, you know what? I mean, if they want me to play all these different places, I'll do it. Wait a minute. That's what the Dolphins asked you to do. And you're like, I don't want to do it. And now, I'll do it. F out of here, Minka. Thank you for the first round pick.
Wow,
thank you for the first round pick.
That the Tre'Davious White made it over Patrick Peterson.
But they're recognizing real there. Yeah. Tre'Davious White right now is the better corner.
Yeah,
look how deep that is. Your second team would be Patrick Peterson and who else?
Minka,
Eddie Jackson,
and Marlon Humphrey.
Who were the starters again? Were they all LSU guys?
No.
Who was the other guy?
Stephon Gilmore.
Okay. Okay.
Tre'Davious. Yeah, LSU.
The
other three are LSU guys.
Texas
is DBU. Yes.
Was Texas mentioned in any big... Was Earl Thomas mentioned at least?
Thomas was mentioned.
Lonnie Johnson? It's deep in the SEC.
What did you just say?
Lonnie Johnson's in there somewhere?
No. Jordan Hicks was... Kenny Vaccaro, Earl Thomas, Jordan Hicks... All Texas guys that would have made
Kenny Vaccaro.
Ooh,
the Big 12.
Big
not
12.
Producing.
Yeah, I mean that's what it would have been.
No, Kenneth Murray is on the first team here,
and he hasn't played,
he's never
he hasn't
played.
A game.
He never played it down.
That seems disrespectful. You got to have somebody else, right?
Who? What linebacker?
AJ Klein.
What?
Yeah, probably AJ Klein. He's a really underrated.
Stop it.
And what about, you haven't even mentioned...
wait, they got Flex.
Ben Heaney? Did you even mention Ben Heaney?
They got Jeff Gladney on this list.
Yeah, that's right.
What?
Yeah, he's never played in the NFL, but still.
Yeah.
Hey, come on, Big 12, you guys suck.
You trash on defense.
I mean,
let's
be real. I want to think about this list. Is this possible that you have rookies who have never played?
Only in the Big 12 so far I've seen.
DBU, give me all the CD Texas
Lamb.
Guys.
CeeDee Lamb, Jeff Gladney.
And Kenneth Murray.
Kenneth Murray.
Big 12.
This is seriously embarrassing. If Texas is DBU, which I think is ridiculous, who are the Longhorns that are in there? Name
them. Well, Earl Thomas and Kenny Vaccaro.
Those two safeties. Yeah. Kenny came out what year? Earl Thomas came out what, 2009?
Kenny Vaccaro's 29 years old, so he was drafted in 2013.
And Earl Thomas has got to be 28.
Yeah, 2010 draft.
Yeah,
only 10 drafts ago. Yeah. Not bad.
Curl Thomas is 31.
31?
Yeah, only 10 drafts ago.
Wow.
DBU.
And shout out for the Big 12 for not... Well, Earl Thomas is really good, but shout out to the Big 12 for not surpassing Kenny Vaccaro.
And the cornerbacks are guys who've never played in the NFL? Nice.
Yeah.
Gladney and who else?
Gladney, Kenneth Murray, and CeeDee Lamb. None of them have played it down.
Who's the other corner?
Oh, Chris Harris Jr. And Xavier Howard.
Where did Chris Harris Jr. play?
At Kansas.
Now, Xavier Howard is legit.
Player. He's legit.
And Chris Harris Jr. can play.
Chris Harris Jr. is legit.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got two that are legit, and then you had to go to a rookie who's never played.
Yep.
In the midst of a pandemic.
What?
Let me see. Oklahoma. Oh. What about, we just had Oklahoma, a really good player from Oklahoma.
Well, there's Oklahoma guys. Joe Mixon, Mark Andrews, CeeDee Lamb, Lane Johnson, Trent Williams, Kenneth Murray, Jordan Phillips, Gerald McCoy they got on this list. Wow. So it's mostly Oklahoma and Patrick Mahomes. We're going to take a break. Al Rosen, our constable, is going to join us on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back. John and Lance, along with Dell, our producer, Al Rosen, Constable Precinct 1, with us here on ESPN 97.5. We've been talking about a lot of stuff going on around the country, and we'll get the perspective from our constable here, who is, how are you feeling, Al?
I am feeling much better. I'm actually trying to get cleared so I can return to work tomorrow. I had a very mild case of COVID, and I'm thankful that I got through it without much problem. So well, I'm being hopefully going to be cleared today.
I bet you're chomping at the bit, too, with as much as going
on. I am.
Yeah.
I am. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great,
hanging,
man.
In there, Al.
You know, we've been talking. There's a lot of things to talk about here. First and foremost, I would have met, man, I don't know. If I was a cop, I'd want to punch Derek Chauvin in the face because he's put every cop in harm's way, not only in this country, but around the world.
Yeah, it's always difficult when you have, you know, one or two bad officers that make it hard for the really great officers that are out there working beats, walking the beat, doing their job every day and doing it successfully. And, you know, anytime you have any bad apple in any organization, whether it be law enforcement or in the judicial system and in corporate America, it just hurts the rest of the organization. And so we're going to have to endure this. We're going to have to bond much closer with all communities and make sure that we do our part to show the good side of law enforcement and all the great things and the lives we've changed. I get letters all the time from the public saying, you know, your officer changed my family member's life. And I know there's so much of that work that goes on there. Of course, it's not it's not leading the news, but there's some great work going on out there. But anytime you have something like this, it hurts. It hurts and it sets us back.
Yep.
And we have to recover from it.
Al Rosen with us, constable here in Precinct 1 on ESPN 97.5. So, Dell, what was your question that sparked all of this?
Well, now I have to consider what I'm seeing are in short bursts in terms of clips on social media. But my question was, I don't know how much you've seen, Mr. Rosen, as far as tactics used to quell, whether they be rioters or protesters. What is being taught? Because from an uneducated viewer like myself, I see what appear to be, in some cases, people standing and just saying their piece and maybe getting tear gassed or being jostled, or in the case of the Australian reporters that's going around, media being beaten because maybe they're not in the right spot at the right time. So, as you said, most of the time, police officers are doing great work. So what's being taught? Because in some cases, it appears like violent interactions are par for the course. And I don't believe that, but sometimes it looks like that.
Yeah, and sometimes it does look like that. I can tell you that we have specially trained people. Every law enforcement agency has specially trained officers that have gone through what we call our special response group, SRG training. And they are taught to show that incredible reserve and how, listen, there's no officer that's against a peaceful protest. It's a constitutional right. The citizens have every right to protest things that they don't like. And that's what makes America great. It makes America free. But I can tell you that anytime it goes past the protest, anytime it goes into violence, anytime it goes into looting, anytime it goes into the other things, of course law enforcement has to react and has to react proportionally. And I can tell you that no officer that's got holding a shield on a front line is interested in fighting with or in any way. In fact, they're showing a lot of restraint. And as long as you're protesting and you're protesting peacefully, and that's what this should be about for George Floyd. He deserves that. He deserves peaceful protests and marching and people honoring his memory. And so the training that they go through, the SRG group goes through, is extensive training on having thick skin and making sure that things don't escalate. The last thing any of us want is for things to escalate. But tensions are running high. People are very engaged in making sure that their voice is heard. And officers are also at a high because, like I said at the beginning of the segment, most of police officers in this country do an incredible, exceptional job. And there are a few bad apples. And it's those bad apples that we're all having to condemn what they did and also make sure that we have some civility that goes on during.
Al, are you allowed to condemn? In other words, do you feel like I think there have been plenty of, I saw there were police officers in Philadelphia that kind of took a knee in response to the protesters and showed some solidarity. And then another group came in that I don't know if it was may have been the National Guard, and it kind of incited some stuff. But do you, when you see any of this, do you say, you know, there's an instance where I think if people felt like there were police on their side, because when you see this happen, generally speaking, it calms things down and people want to believe that they are on their side. Do you understand what I'm saying? It seems like there are some who are maybe unwilling or too afraid to say, hey, look, we're on your side too. Because as you said, most right-minded people don't want any of this stuff to happen, especially what happened to George Floyd.
Yeah, and let me tell you, police officers, good police officers, don't like bad police officers. Let me assure you of that. I cannot stress that enough. Is to find that those bad police officers are the ones that we all should be looking out for. And there are some. There have been controversial shootings. There have been wrongful things that have gone on. And so it's the good officers that are having to that feel very much like the community and very much feel the community's feeling on how they're dealing with this whole thing as well. But what that officer did is not appropriate. There's no training that would condone what he did. And I stand with protesters. I can tell you right now, there's many officers that feel and would take a knee to honor some of the things that have gone on across the nation when it comes to a bad shooting or an arrest that results in a death that was wrongful. There's nobody. Police officers are human beings. They're fathers. They're brothers. They want peace. They want to preserve life, and they want to make sure that we do everything right. But is it always going to be right? No. We're human beings, and so there's people that out there that give really good officers a bad name because of some of the actions that they take. So sure, some of my officers want to take a knee and honor what happened and honor Ms. Floyd's memory and things of that nature. So, sure, absolutely. It's not an us against them mentality. We are all in this together as Americans.
Al Rosen with us here on ESPN 97.5, Constable Precinct 1. So today, your guys are going to be they're going to walk from what's the park?
Discovery Green.
Are your guys going to be part of that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We are, and of course, we're responsible for the downtown courthouse complex in terms of all the security there. And we really have had, we've had a pretty good response to the protesters that have come out. And, you know, again, the way we honor George Floyd's life and who, what he stood for, and his family is by having peaceful protests and people that come out and say how they feel. It's important for leaders and politicians and people to hear how the public feels and what they're feeling. But what we can't have is we can't have businesses broken into. We can't have cars overturned. We can't have fires. We can't have any of that stuff. We can't, because we are a lawful society. We follow the law, and law enforcement can't allow for that to happen. As much as we grieve and as much as we are saddened by this unfortunate death of Mr. Floyd, and especially being a Houstonian, we want people to protest appropriately. We want people to act appropriately. That's the best way we can honor his memory and his family's memory, is by protesting peacefully, you know, discussing the real issues that we need to dialogue about, and get to the bottom of the root cause of some of these feelings and turn them. I do it all the time, guys. I have two big events every year where I dialogue with youth about our relationship, and we dialogue what them about we do. We take that back and we train on it. We make sure that we need to make sure that their voice is heard, and we do. And every year we do that so that we can bond closer with the community that may not like us that much. And that's what we got to continue to do, is build those bridges between law enforcement and our community. We got to do so much more of it. I do it pretty much year round, but we got to do more of it. Everybody's got to do it.
Constable, if a citizen is watching a protest that appears to be peaceful and it goes in a direction where, for by all accounts, a policeman may have agitated the situation, should citizens expect accountability from those particular law enforcement institutions and say, okay, that's an obvious case where unnecessary force was used or an incitement was done by a certain police officer? As a citizen, should I expect that particular officer will be disciplined for his actions?
Absolutely, without exception. As an administrator of a law enforcement agency, we're the second largest constable's office in the U.S., I expect that. I expect my people that work under me, as other administrators do, to act professionally and to act in a way consistent with best policy. And I can tell you right now, if an officer engages in conduct that's insightful and is trying to escalate things, there's going to be trouble for that officer. And I'm going to tell you, most officers would not want anything like that. They want to de-escalate things. They want to make sure that everybody gets home safely, but absolutely, they're going to get in trouble. Now, keep in mind, I have body cameras on every one of my officers. I have audio and video going on in every one of my patrol cars. And every month, I have supervisors that review the interaction between that officer and the public. And we make sure, we audit that to make sure that the officer's acting consistent with professionalism and good policy. And so, that's just done routinely, not at times when we're having you know issues in the community, but it's done year round. And so, yes, if that were seen on camera, if that was seen and we saw it, absolutely the officer would be investigated by Internal Affairs, and if it was proven, then they would be disciplined, absolutely, up to and including termination.
Al Rosen, Constable, with us here on ESPN 97.5. I kind of feel like I've heard more than a few times now over the last few incidents that have occurred, I can't breathe. I kind of feel like that there should be a policy if someone who's being arrested says, I can't breathe. Al, do you think that might become protocol at some point?
Well, first of all, you know, there's really no training that talks about choking somebody or anything like that. You know, from what I saw on the video, and I haven't seen all the videos, is, you know, when they had him on the ground, basically there's no need to put a knee on a neck. There's no need to put somebody that's already in handcuffs. I mean, what should they have done is just picked him up and put him in a police car and transported him, and instead of just sitting there, you know, holding him on the ground and things like that. If you need additional help by moving somebody because they're strong, or you just need additional help, just call for additional help to come over. You know, we don't teach choking in the police academy. It's just not a class that's taught. There's a mechanics of arrest, So they go, officers go through a complete continuum of mechanics of arrest, and they're taught how to properly do that. And so there's just, there's nothing real valuable out of choking somebody. You know, unless it was a fight for your life and you had no choice between them, but you had a guy that's on the ground, you know, at that point saying, I can't breathe. Of course the appropriate thing is to whatever you're doing that's preventing this person from breathing or whatever you're doing that is causing him not able to breathe properly, you of course rectify that and fix that immediately. And I mean, that's just good police work. Our job is to preserve life, not take life. You know, we try to do everything we can to prevent somebody from dying. So, yeah, absolutely. And there will be policies looked at even further to look further into this in terms of creating new policy that says you shall not do X. And it's justifiable.
You know, the one thing, Al, that does concern me is that this is a position of a great deal of a great deal is expected of a position of power like that. And so when you get that, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, you do have to have thicker skin. You do have to understand how to de-escalate. You can't be as impulsive. And so how about the comments from people that, you know, how do you go about hiring the right people with the right mindset and the right personality traits? Is there enough done to isolate the not only just the negative things that you don't want, but the positive things that, that are predictive in terms of who might be best to handle situations that go sideways?
Yes, and we go through training like that. We have implicit bias training that I make my folks go through, de-escalation training that, that they go through. And yes, you're correct. As law enforcement officers, we have tremendous power, but I can tell you that you have to, we are the professionals. I tell my people all the time, we are the professionals. We have to rise above petty words. We have to rise above people that that challenge our authority, because people do. And we have to rise above all that. And, you know, an officer doesn't always have a good day, just like every other human being doesn't always have a good day. But I can tell you that with the training and with the de-escalation training and the implicit bias training and the culture diversity training that, that all of us get, you are expected to kind of rise above that. And sometimes it's difficult because we're catching people at the worst times in their lives in many instances. We're catching them at a family disturbance. We're catching them when their emotions are running so high. And our job is to de-escalate that and calm things down. And often we're not just police officers. Often we're social workers and spiritual leaders and nurses. And so there's so many things that, that are expected of an officer, and we have to be that professional. That's the profession that we chose to practice. And we have to rise above petty words and things of where people are trying to get under our skin and just be that consummate professional.
Well, hopefully this will go without incident today, because this is, and then we got, you know, the funeral is what, next Tuesday, I believe, here. Uh-huh. So there's going to be obviously a lot more emotion going on. And Houston, you know, we're inextricably involved because he grew up here. And he will be buried here. So you guys are going to have your hands full, and hopefully, Al, everybody, cooler heads will all prevail on both sides, and we can get through this thing without any more incidents. That would be awesome, Raheel.
That would be, and I can tell you that I am extremely happy that the family has spoken out against you know, violent protesting, and the family knows that that's not helping the cause and helping dialogue and helping people kind of start talking about things. And I'm so happy to hear his brother come out and say, this is not honoring my brother's memory. Anybody that's out there, you know, protesting violently or breaking into stores and things like that. And it, you know, so I think people of Houston, and at least I'm hopeful that people of Houston are going to honor Mr. Floyd's memory and honor the family and be respectful of what the family wants and the wishes of the family, and that is let's honor and remember him, and let's dialogue. Let's build from here. Let's move from here to a greater, better place for law enforcement and the community. I can tell you that law enforcement deeply loves the community, and there's a lot of people that deeply love law enforcement, but we have a community that needs us to bond much closer with and get a better understanding of cultural differences and a better understanding of each other. And that's what I hope grows from this, is our ability in law enforcement to come out and bond much further, much deeper with a community that in some instances doesn't trust us. And we have to fix that. We cannot allow that to fester. We cannot allow that feeling to continue to exist.
You mentioned trust in the community, and from the overwhelming, it feels overwhelming that most of the protesters are younger and certainly a diverse background, and there seems to be an anger and a distrust of law enforcement. Do you sense that younger adults have less, I don't know if patience is the right word, but less understanding of law enforcement?
Yes, I do. I think that somewhat of the younger crowd is less closer with family and teachers and law enforcement, and so I think there is that level of distrust and not understanding everything. And our society's changed quite a bit. So it's incumbent, again, upon us to build those bridges with our younger community and get them to understand why we do what we do. I know, as I told you earlier, we do a teen leadership summit every year, and it's about 1,000 at-risk kids. And when we first get in that room, there's tremendous distrust and anger and feelings are going everywhere. But by the end of the summit, we will have turned several kids, and there's a much better understanding of the law, much better understanding of why we do things sometimes that we do. And we learn from them of what we're doing that is not helpful to them and makes and creates that distrust. And so that's what we have to do more of, is we have to dialogue with our youth more so that there's a much better understanding of their perspective, and then they get to understand why sometimes we do some of the things we do. Sometimes we tell people, well, please take your hands out of your pocket. Well, you're being, in some instances, kids think that that's very disrespectful, and, you know, why are you asking me to do that? And there's the questioning of it. And so if you talk to a child and you're telling a young person, hey, I'm doing that for your safety and mine. I don't know if there's any weapons. I don't know you. You don't know me. And so, you know, once you explain things as to why they happen, it does make the encounter go much better. And so you're right, though. We just need to do a much better job of engaging the youth that distrust whatever race it is.
I saw, Al, that, and this makes it even more difficult, 7% of the people arrested here in Houston were from out of state. So, and we're seeing videos of all of a sudden on a street corner, there's a load of bricks that have been dropped off there. That this is there's some kind of organization, there's some that this is orchestrated somehow, and maybe these people that have come here from out of state don't have the best intentions, Al. So
they don't.
You got to fight that as well.
You do, and you're exactly right. A lot of these people that are inciting the violent protests are from out of state. They are planted here for the specific reason of escalating things and dividing communities, and you know, dividing communities. There's a business. There's people that make money off of dividing communities, and I can tell you right now, what we have to do as a community is not allow that. Not allow that divisiveness, not allow people to come into our city and incite, you know, things. As I said, we need to do more, but we do a decent job. At least I'm speaking for my department. I think we do an incredible job of engaging the community that doesn't like us. been building trust and rapport with the community. I mean, my office mirrors the community that we serve when it comes to racial and ethnic backgrounds. All the way from the top to the bottom, we have diversity, and I'm proud of that. And so there's a seat at the table for everyone. But you're right. You have these outsiders that are outside influences that are coming in that are creating and inciting people that otherwise would be peaceful. And that's the people that we need to focus on, and that's the people that we're going to end up arresting because they're going to commit criminal acts, and we're going to end up arresting them.
Did you say earlier that you have the second largest
second largest constable's office in the United States?
Wow.
Yes, sir.
I guess okay, yeah. If you're okay being second, that's great.
Classic John.
Listen, our buddy Raheel was wondering if you can get him some VIP parking near Discovery Green. He wants to go today.
Yeah, I mean, I think he should park his car right next to it.
See how that works out. Al, we appreciate it. Al Rosen, Constable Precinct 1, right here on ESPN 97.5. Hey, be safe. Congratulations getting through the coronavirus, and hopefully we'll be seeing you soon, man.
Thank you. You guys, I appreciate you and all the work that you guys do. God bless you, and let's hope that our city gets through this appropriately. So God bless our community.
Yep.
Thank you so
absolutely.
Much.
Thanks, Al. That's Al Rosen right here on ESPN 97.5.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.